You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thanks for joining us for March 2nd, Saturday reading of the Arapaho County News. My name is Tim Elliott. Today I'll be reading the following main articles. Puzzle Me This: The Art of Human Interaction Fits Into Unplugging from Cell Phones, by the Sentinel. Aurora paramedic gets 5 years in prison for Elijah McClain's death, by Colleen Slevin, Associated Press. Homelessness programs face funding challenges, by Nina Joss. Arapaho libraries host community conversations, by Elizabeth Slay. Governor Polis launches Greenhouse Gas Pollution Reduction Roadmap 2.0, by London Lyle, special to Colorado Community Media. Still a teenager, on Leap Day, Granddad has heaps of wisdom and lives life to the fullest, by Nina Joss. I'll also be reading various stories and other articles. Puzzle Me This: The Art of Human Interaction Fits Into Unplugging from Cell Phones. In a high school art class, students were plugged into their own work. They were hunched over their digital tables as they silently worked on their projects. At one table, however, others were busy connecting puzzle pieces and connecting with one another. Sitting side by side, some Cherry Creek High School students looked for the edge pieces. Others connected clusters of unique patterns and colors. The students were given the opportunity to work on a puzzle created by none other than their art teacher, Alessandra Silas. She was chosen to be a part of Verizon Wireless's campaign for Global Day of Unplugging, which encourages people to put their devices down and have human interactions. Her art will be shared with customers in the metro area at local Verizon stores. I still haven't totally wrapped my head around that, to be totally honest. It's pretty surreal, Silas said. Andre Duncan, director of retail sales for Verizon, said that Silas' art was chosen specifically because it spoke to the essence of unplugging, being present, and focusing on what's important. The 500-piece puzzle depicts a woman watering various potted plants. The phrase, "What you water grows," is written on one corner of the puzzle. Duncan also acknowledged that Verizon is a technology-based company, but they also believe that human connection is the root of everything that we do. According to a survey conducted by Verizon, 16% of American adults reportedly spend 5 to 6 hours on their phones. Reportedly, 25% spend more than 6 hours a day on their phones. Gen Z, which the Pew Research Center defines as people born between 1997 and 2012, and women spend more than 6 hours a day on their phones. Estrella Gonzalez, a high school senior and student in Silas' art class, said her screen time is about 10 hours a day, excluding the times when she's driving and sleeping. And Dora Stock, a senior, and Evie Change, a junior, also said they spend a lot of time on their phones and laptops. The students use their phones for school, to read, to listen to music, or just to pass the time. Silas said that getting people to unplug is a daily battle in high school, but that art is the best way to disconnect from the digital world. It sounds biased because I teach art, but making something is the best way to go about that, she said. So something like creating a puzzle, where you create a thing even if you don't have a creative skill set, is a wonderful option. In addition to creating art, both digitally and through analog mediums like paint, Silas unplugs by going on hikes with her husband. For Gonzalez, she enjoys going to the movies or bowling with friends. Stock spends time with her dog and mom. Chang does her homework and talks with friends. Global Day of Unplugging is an international campaign to end loneliness and encourage human interactions by stepping away from screens and participating in an offline activity. It is meant to be celebrated from sundown to sundown on March 1st through 2nd. Around the world, people respond to the campaign with their own events and calls to action. A Maryland high school hosted an unplugging challenge. Artwork was displayed in Paris, and people were invited to a phone-free dinner in Korea, in South Korea, and Indonesia. Outside of teaching, Silas also creates and sells illustrations on her website, including the piece used for the jigsaw puzzle. She said it's nice to show in practice that people, especially someone that her students know and not some stranger on the internet, can make a living as an artist. This is a really valuable learning opportunity to understand and see that being an illustrator, being a designer, is a real career that you can have, Silas said. Her students said that she was cool and appreciated her art and the work that went into it. Gonzalez said that it was a nice experience to work on something that was created by someone she knew personally. Chang said she knew that her art teacher created illustrations outside of work, but it's really cool to be able to actually see what she's been working on. It definitely takes a lot of effort to make something like this, and I can see that, Stock said. I can tell it's really important to Silas. Get the puzzle. In Denver, 3 Verizon stores will be giving out the jigsaw puzzle with any purchase. The stores are Cherry Creek Mall, 3000 East 1st Avenue, Colorado Boulevard, 2073 South Colorado Boulevard, Northfield, 8384 East Northfield Boulevard. Aurora paramedic gets 5 years in prison for Elijah McClain's death. An Aurora paramedic was sentenced Friday to 5 years in prison in a rare prosecution of medical responders following the death of Elijah McClain, a black man whose name became part of the rallying cries for social justice that swept the U.S. in 2020. McClain was walking down the street in Aurora in 2019 when police responding to a suspicious person report forcibly restrained him and put him in a neck hold. His final words, "I can't breathe," foreshadowed those of George Floyd a year later in Minneapolis. Peter Sasinchiak and a fellow paramedic were convicted in December of criminally negligent homicide for injecting McClain with ketamine, a powerful sedative ultimately blamed for killing the 23-year-old massage therapist. Sasinchiak also was convicted on a more serious charge of second-degree assault for giving a drug without consent or a legitimate medical purpose. McClain's death and others have raised questions about the use of ketamine to subdue struggling suspects, and the prosecution sent shockwaves through the ranks of paramedics across the U.S. McClain's mother, Sheenan, raised her fist in the air as she left the courtroom following Friday's sentencing, as she has done after previous hearings. In testimony before the sentence was handed down by Judge Mark Warner, Sheenan, McClain said she once dreamed of being a firefighter and considered them heroes, until the day they took my son's life. "You are a local hero no more," she said, as Sasinchiak sat with his attorneys at a nearby table. "Next time, think for yourself and do not follow the direction of a crowd of cowards. She added that the other paramedics could have intervened simply by just saying, "Stop hurting my patient." Sasinchiak had faced up to 16 years in prison on the assault charge, and the 5-year sentence was the minimum the judge could have given him under sentencing guidelines. The second convicted paramedic, Jeremy Cooper, is scheduled to be sentenced in April. Sasinchiak, who has been in custody since his conviction, asked the judge for mercy. He wiped away tears as family members and friends testified as character witnesses on his behalf, and later told the judge he had spent his 18-year career as a firefighter and paramedic putting his life on the line to save others. "I have never backed down from a call, and I've had more things happen to me than you can imagine," he said. "It sickened me when the prosecution said during their closing argument that I showed no remorse for Elijah. There was absolutely no intent to cause any harm to Elijah McClain." As he was led out of the court in handcuffs, someone from the family called out, "Love you, Pete," as Sisinchkiak looked back and waved. Sisinchkiak's wife noted that the sentence was the most lenient her husband could have received before starting to cry. "It's almost better knowing," Katie Sisinchkiak said. Before the hearing, supporters of Sisinchkiak took up some of the rows of seats on the prosecution side of the courtroom. When Shanine McLean walked in and saw them, she said, "You all supporting Elijah?" sarcastically, holding her hand to her heart. Firefighters and officials from their union sharply criticized the state's prosecution of Sisinchkiak. They said it was discouraging firefighters from becoming paramedics, decreasing the number of qualified personnel in emergencies and thereby putting lives at risk. "Convicting Pete for the death is not justice. It's the very definition of a scapegoat," said former Aurora Lieutenant John Lauder, who recently retired after working with Sisinchkiak after 2 decades. "Will paramedics now be held responsible for outcomes beyond their control?" But Assistant Attorney Jason Slothauber said Sisinchkiak didn't follow his training and never properly assessed McLean before he knowingly authorized giving him more ketamine than was needed. "Elijah was treated as a problem that could be easily solved with ketamine, rather than a person who needed to be evaluated, spoken to, treated with respect and care," he said. "Paramedics who are not upholding their oaths to save lives should be held accountable," said Candace Bailey, a police reform advocate in Aurora, Colorado. "If you're doing your job and you're living up to the oath of your job, why would we ever have a conversation outside of thank you," said Bailey, who was upset that the longest sentence for killing McLean was only 5 years. "Not one of them should have gotten away without 30 years on their backs," she said. McLean's death received little attention outside of Aurora initially, but gained renewed interest as mass protests swept the nation after Floyd's death. McLean was stopped by police after a 911 caller reported he looked suspicious, walking down the street, waving his arms, and wearing a face mask on August 24, 2019, in the Denver suburb of Aurora. McLean, who had been listening to music with earbuds, seemed caught off guard when an officer put his hands on him within seconds of approaching him. That began a struggle, including a neck hold and a restraint that lasted about 20 minutes before McLean was injected with 500 milligrams of ketamine. He suffered cardiac arrest on the way to the hospital and was taken off life support 3 days later. Experts testified that the sedative ultimately killed McLean, who was already weakened from struggling to breathe while being pinned down after inhaling vomit into his lungs during the struggle with police. Prosecutors said the paramedics did not conduct basic medical checks of McLean, such as taking his pulse before giving him the ketamine. The dose was too much for someone of his size. Prosecutors said they also did not monitor McLean immediately after giving him the sedative, but instead left him lying on the ground, making it harder to breathe. The case against the paramedics was closely followed by firefighters and medical responders across the country. A firefighter union leader, Edward Kelly, with the International Association of Firefighters, told reporters after Sisinchkiak's sentencing that prosecutors were unfairly criminalizing split-second decisions by responders. The case also highlighted gaps in medical protocols for sedations of people in police custody that experts said must be addressed so more deaths can be prevented. "We fail to realize just how dangerous the restraint and chemical sedation of these individuals can be," said Eric Yeager, a paramedic and EMS educator in New Hampshire. "For better or worse, their criminal convictions are focusing attention on the problem." The sole police officer convicted in McLean's death, Randy Rodema, was convicted of criminally negligent homicide. He was sentenced to 14 months in jail in January. 2 other officers who were indicted were acquitted following weeks-long jury trials. Aurora man found dead by gunshot in apartment. Police say incident was not random. By Max Levy, Sentinel, Colorado staff writer. Police are investigating the death of a man found shot while inside of his Aurora apartment Tuesday evening as a homicide, and say they are working to compile a description of the person responsible. Aurora Police Department officers responded to the apartment complex in the 12,600 block of East Pacific Circle at about 9:30 p.m. to do a welfare check, after a neighbor reported the door to the victim's apartment had been left open, according to a news release and APD spokesman Joe Moylan. When police arrived at the apartment, they saw the open door and noticed the lights inside were on. After calling out and hearing no response, officers entered and found the 46-year-old victim, who had been shot once. The man was pronounced dead at the scene and will be identified by the Arapahoe County Coroner's Office, police said. Though the news release said the man was discovered by police Thursday evening, Moylan said the department could not disclose when the shooting itself may have taken place. The release said police do not have any information about the shooter, but that investigators believe the homicide was not random. APD encourages members of the public with information about the shooting to contact 720-913-7867. Firework explosion kills man at Aurora Park early Thursday, police say. By Max Levy, Sentinel, Colorado staff writer. A man was fatally injured in what police are calling an accident involving fireworks near Quincy Reservoir near early Thursday morning. At about 1 a.m., police responded to multiple 911 calls about an explosion in the area of the Grandview Dog Park, located near the reservoir. Officers found a 42-year-old Strasburg man dead from injuries that had apparently been inflicted by a firework. Police said in a news release that the man will be identified by the Arapahoe County Coroner's Office. Investigators believe the man traveled with two other people to visit food and beverage businesses in Aurora and traveled to the park with fireworks in tow. While police initially described the fireworks as homemade in a social media post, the department later said in its news release that it is unclear whether the fireworks were improvised or purchased out of state. The Strasburg man was killed when a firework exploded as he was lighting it, police said. No other injuries or property damage was reported. When law enforcement officers traveled to the man's home, they found no evidence of explosive manufacturing and no other fireworks. The Arapahoe County Sheriff's Office Bomb Squad and agents from the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Denver Division also responded to help with the first part of the investigation, and the Regional Anti-Violence Enforcement Network is partnering with local and federal law enforcement on the case. The County Bomb Squad deactivated four other fireworks found at the scene. Police said they do not anticipate filing criminal charges, but that the investigation is ongoing. This is a breaking story and will be updated. Homelessness programs face funding challenges. On a single night in January 2023, 442 people were experiencing homelessness in Arapahoe County, excluding those in the city of Aurora. And this is only a fraction of the number of people in the county who are homeless, according to experts. Individuals can be missed in the annual point-in-time count, part of the national effort to get a snapshot of how many people are homeless. Some may have the luck to sleep in a motel or friend's home as the count takes place, and not everyone experiencing homelessness is sleeping on the streets. Still, the picture is helpful to Arapahoe County as it works to coordinate solutions to homelessness with regional partners. Yet it is also facing a funding crisis as American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, funds granted during the COVID-19 pandemic dry up. The funds have supported many programs meant to reduce homelessness. For instance, $1.5 million went towards an eviction reduction program that helped nearly 700 families avoid evictions, according to the county. The county also put $10 million towards an affordable housing grant program that helped create more than 665 housing units throughout the county. But as these funds run out, the county is concerned about what comes next. The county is contending with an increase in demand for services at a time when costs and the population are rising. County officials are warning about the possibility of budget cuts to its homelessness reduction programs and more. ARPA funding has presented us with a unique opportunity to invest in the well-being and prosperity of our community, Carrie Warren-Gully, chair of the Arapaho County Commissioners, said in a press release. As ARPA wraps up, we need to be realistic and strategic about next steps. Commissioners and staff are looking for regional solutions when it comes to homelessness. For years, organizations in the county worked separately to address homelessness. In 2021, commissioners decided to kick off a regional approach by creating the Homelessness Coordinating Committee. This group includes over 100 local government entities, nonprofit organizations, businesses, and other partners. And this year, the committee issued its strategic plan with 6 high-priority recommendations. One priority involves designing a standardized client intake protocol so agencies can coordinate care. Having full information, sharing among partner providers about each client, and transparency about next steps in the client's process will enable a collaborative case management approach, the plan says. The plan also proposes that within 3 years, service providers all use an existing shared management system to gather and study data about the needs of people experiencing homelessness. Other aspects of the plan focus on educating communities about their unhoused neighbors and expanding affordable housing inventory in the county. Homelessness continues to be one of the most pressing challenges in our region and across the state, and has been compounded by a lack of affordable housing options, Warren-Gully said. Catherine Smith, Arapaho County's Director of Community Resources, said the strategic plan formalizes the work the county and its partners have been doing for years. The plan allows us for an entire community to be working toward these initiatives, she said. We're all working towards pieces of this separately, currently, but how can we come together as a region and really work together on solutions? Until February 23rd, the commissioners are asking for community feedback on potential solutions to the county's funding challenge. Arapaho Libraries hosts community conversations. Topics will include war, peace, democracy, and more. In an effort to spark connection, encourage listening, and foster understanding, Arapaho Libraries will host 4 community conversations at different locations this year. The first conversation, Peace and War, will be held February 29th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Eloise May Library at 1471 South Parker Road. Louise Ritchie, Community Engagement Manager, said the conversations will be led by diverse leaders on different topics. These conversations aren't about changing anyone's perspective. They are about celebrating the diversity of thought and experience in our communities, Ritchie said. Ritchie said the library system has had a long-standing goal of hosting events that bring out the community together to learn together. We feel that the library is the perfect place to bring the community together for this type of conversation, Ritchie said. There will be 3 other community conversations, which include Individual Freedom and Public Protection on May 30th at South Glen Library, Democracy on August 29th at Smoky Hill Library, and Privilege, Power, and Poverty on November 21st at Cobell Library. We are really hoping that those who attend will be able to share their own experiences and also learn about the experiences of others, Ritchie said. Ultimately, we hope these conversations will promote connection and understanding, which is so needed in our communities. Richie said to ensure the environment at these conversations is right for sharing and listening, the library has hired Master Facilitator Angela Engel. Angela has more than 3 decades of experience engaging communities, catalyzing action, and empowering voices, Richie said. Her expertise in conflict resolution and consensus building helps her create inclusive and inspiring spaces where everyone feels heard and valued. Arapaho Libraries is asking attendees of the events to agree to the following in preparation for the community conversation. Be curious and listen to understand. Show respect and suspend judgment. Note any common ground as well as any differences. Be authentic and welcome that from others. Be purposeful and to the point and own and guide the conversation, Richie said. The first community conversation will include three panelists. Hamed Abid Rabu, a professor of Joseph Corbell School of International Studies, University of Denver, attorney Joan McWilliams, and director of space engineering for General Atomics, Steve Markser. Our panelists were excited about the opportunity to be part of this conversation, Richie said. We just asked, and they all said yes. Going forward, Richie said she is hopeful that the library can be a place of connection. To save a spot and for more information, visit ArapahoLibraries.org or call 303-542-7279. Charter school at Centennial Airport won't be renewed. By Taylor Shaw. Colorado Skies Academy, an aerospace-focused charter school at Centennial Airport, faces an uncertain future after Cherry Creek Schools voted to not renew its contract. In making the decision, the district's board raised concerns about the charter school's viability, citing issues such as declining student enrollment and budget deficits. The school district has also conducted annual evaluations of Colorado Skies Academy and said the school had below-average ratings 3 years in a row. We have real concerns about Colorado Skies Academy, particularly around their financial performance and budget, said Ann Egan, a board member at a recent meeting. The numbers are much the same as last year, and we're concerned the school won't even be financially viable through the end of this school year. Recruitment numbers continue to decline, and without adding a significant number of new students or a large financial donation, the school will run out of cash, Egan said. Three leaders of the charter school, which serves about 100 students in 6th through 8th grade, asked the district to reconsider and push back against the allegations. I think it's unconscionable and, quite honestly, unethical that you would take action against a school that you haven't even stepped foot in, said Tommy Bryan, chair of Colorado Skies Academy chair of Colorado Skies Academy Board of Directors. No parents spoke in support of Colorado Skies Academy at the meeting. Rather, two parents said their children had negative experiences at the school. With the board's decision to not renew, the current contract between the school district and the charter school will end on June 21st. In a statement, Colorado Skies Academy School Director Krista Coriel said the school's board of directors is drafting a request to be released from the current authorizer, which is the Cherry Creek School District, to allow the school to transfer the charter to another authorizer. According to the Colorado Department of Education, only school districts can authorize a charter school except for two scenarios: when the school district does not have exclusive chartering authority, or when the school district grants permission to the charter school to seek authorization through the Colorado Charter School Institute. Our priority will always be the well-being and education of our learners, and we will do everything in our power to keep the school open and continue providing them with the exceptional education experience they deserve, Coriel said in the statement. The middle school, located on the grounds of the Wings Over the Rockies Exploration of Flight campus at Centennial Airport, opened in August 2019 with hopes of inspiring careers in the aerospace industry, according to its website. The Cherry Creek School District had a four-year contract with the school, set from July 2019 to June 2023. When the charter school submitted an application to renew, the Cherry Creek School Board raised significant concerns. The district decided to extend the contract for 1 year through June 20, 2024. According to the contract, the district set conditions that the charter school needed to substantially comply within order to request an additional contract extension. These conditions were not met, the district found. The academy lacked sufficient funds to cover core expenditures, like staff salaries. The academy also did not meet enrollment projections, with 105 students enrolled as of February 1st. The school has had consistently declining enrollment over time, the district said, adding that sustained enrollment is crucial as it drives funding. Coriel said that when the school district gave only a one-year contract extension in 2023, it was seemingly a death sentence, noting it is difficult to get teachers to commit to a school when they believe there is little job security. It also provides problems in recruiting students since families are concerned the school might not be there after 1 year, Coriel said. CSA, Colorado Skies Academy, received direct feedback from families that declined their acceptance letters, stating that they weren't coming to the school because there was no assurance that their children would be able to complete all their middle school years at CSA. Meredith Motley, an administrator for Colorado Skies Academy, said that just 45% of the school students come from within the Cherry Creek School District. Of the remaining student population, Motley said 35% come from Douglas County, 7% are from Adams County, 7% are from Littleton Schools, and 6% come from other districts in the state. Governor Polis launches Greenhouse Gas Pollution Reduction Roadmap 2.0. At a Westminster light rail station on an unseasonably warm February day, Governor Jared Polis spoke about the future of Colorado's air quality and unveiled a new version of his administration's Greenhouse Gas Pollution Reduction Roadmap, dubbed Roadmap 2.0. The plan, a renewal of a strategy he first set into motion in 2021, aims to cut greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030, with an ultimate goal of net zero greenhouse gas pollution by 2050. Roughly 95% of the near-term actions from the original roadmap have been completed, he said, primarily by reducing emissions in industrial facilities, electric power generation, agriculture, transportation, and in buildings. State officials added that Colorado is about 80% of the way to its goal of a 50% emissions reduction. In a very short time, we've made remarkable progress toward meeting our climate goals, but there is still work to do, Colorado Energy Office Executive Director Will Torr said. Roadmap 2.0 pushes Governor Polis's bold vision on this vital issue to new heights. We believe these new near-term actions will enable even greater nation-leading progress in addressing greenhouse gas pollution in Colorado. Despite Roadmap 2.0 being mostly met with optimism, some climate experts and activists aren't convinced the Polis administration is doing enough to combat climate change. According to the Rocky Mountain Institute and the Colorado Energy Office report, Colorado is not on schedule to meet the 50% goal. Colorado is in a position to miss its climate goals after implementation of the first roadmap, which relied heavily on incentives and voluntary actions, an approach that is not delivering on the hoped-for results, a joint statement from the Environmental Defense Fund, Western Resources Advocates, and Sierra Club Red. Banking on a similar uncertain approach, without directly limiting pollution across major emitting sectors, is likely to continue leaving the state short of its emissions reduction estimates and short of the results needed. The statement referred to the January 2021 roadmap strategy of offering financial incentives for renewable energy, offering tax credits, grants, and rebates for individuals and businesses to install renewable energy systems, such as solar panels or wind turbines, or to purchase electric vehicles and energy-efficient appliances. Polis drew criticism from conservatives and business groups for his proposed employee traffic reduction program in 2021, which ultimately failed. At the February 26th event, Polis acknowledged to reporters that the goal was not met, but that he remained confident in the progress. "We're always excited about getting goals that are ambitious, but that are reachable," Polis answered. "And if a goal is too easy to reach, then it's not worth setting." The new roadmap similarly offers financial incentives for individuals and businesses, but with a new section on strategic growth, which will focus on preserving natural lands, building sustainable housing developments, energy-efficient homes, and increase access to multiple forms of transportation, such as public transit, biking, and walking. Kevin Matthews, who leads Denver's Yes in My Backyard group, which supports more housing and communities, is on board with the plan, saying, "We are pleased to see the updated greenhouse gas roadmap continues to recognize the importance of allowing more Coloradans to live in the neighborhoods where they walk, bike, or take public transportation." Roadmap 2.0 was put together with the help of focus groups involving community members across the state. The list of 49 near-term actions laid out in the plan is also projected to create as many as 95,000 new jobs. Colorado has been a national model in bold climate action that improves air quality and protects our precious resources and open space. This updated, comprehensive roadmap continues pushing our state forward in ways that will save Coloradans money, protect our air and water, and ensure a more sustainable future for Colorado, Polis said. Still a teenager on Leap Day. When some people turn 18, they might head to the convenience store to buy their first lottery ticket. They might then stop by the county clerk's office to register to vote. But not Chuck Faithful. Instead, he's planning to spend his 18th birthday with his grandkids. "We'll just smile, give hugs, be happy," he said. "Just something simple. Especially at this point, my needs are simple. No, this isn't the curious case of Benjamin Button. And it's not inaccurate, but it does take some math to understand." Chuck was a Leap Day baby, born on February 29, 1952. While he's enjoyed 72 trips around the sun, he's only been able to officially celebrate his birthdays every 4 years. For some people, living life with a quarter of everyone else's birthdays would be a huge bummer. But for Chuck, it has become something better. Call it a metaphor, a mantra, or maybe even an excuse. The 29th inspires him to live his life to the fullest. As his wife, Kathy Faithful, said, he's just a little boy who hasn't grown up yet. For instance, the invincible daredevil within him is still strong. Last summer, he mountain biked down Pikes Peak, the 14,115-foot-tall mountain that hovers over Colorado Springs. "I'll be doing it again this year, since I'll still be a teenager," he said. Sitting in a basement decked out with pirate memorabilia, posters of satellites, and photos of Navy jets, Chuck smiled. The room in the couple's house near Littleton speaks of his extensive passions. In one corner, there is a large, brightly colored pinball machine. The low ceiling nearby is protected with foam padding, so Chuck, a 6-foot-2 tall, won't hit his head. Next to a desk on the other side of the room are two bicycles set up for indoor riding. And When the weather is right, he turns to his mountain bike. I started off with an old bike, got a mountain bike, he said. For a time, if I went out for a ride, I would complain that if I came back without any blood, it was a boring ride. Even though Chuck said he no longer aims for the excitement of scratches and crashes, he is grateful just to be able to ride. I don't take it for granted, he said, because I know a lot of people can't cycle regardless of age, and the fact that I can, that's where, I'll say, some of the 70-year-old shows up. Because you are thankful for being able to do those things. And then, you know, in the back of my head, the 18-year-old is screaming, "Let's go faster!" Kathy said that when Chuck rides, he grins and laughs uncontrollably and joyfully. As the two of them talked in the basement, his childlike joy spilled into many more topics. In fact, one of the things that makes Chuck most excited in life is what covers the walls of the room, relics of his career in aerospace. "It's just something that has always been in my soul, to fly," he said. And then things associated with that were of interest to me. Chuck jokes that Leap Day probably played a role in what became his 50-year-long career. An understanding of planetary motion was crucial to explain his birthday to childhood friends. After earning his degree in aerospace engineering, Chuck worked at an aerospace company that evolved into Northrop Grumman. There, he was involved with building aircrafts for the U.S. Navy. He then moved on to what is now Lockheed Martin, working in the satellite program. He worked on satellites that orbit, photograph, and map planets and other solar system activity, such as comets and solar wind. He was even part of the last servicing mission for the famous Hubble Space Telescope, which captures images of planets, stars, and galaxies. Chuck said his favorite part of his work was the cool factor of being a part of such fascinating aerospace, technology, and space missions. "There's just no way to describe it otherwise. It's just so cool that you could be involved with all of these things," he said. Aerospace even brought Chuck and Kathy together. She worked on an executive director staff and in the satellite technology testing labs, and they met at work. The two share a mindset that a person is never too old to have fun and embrace life. They have even gotten several tattoos together, and they want more. One is a Jolly Roger on Chuck's right calf, which ties into the pirate decorations on his wall. "Why should you not do something just because you reach a certain age?" Kathy said. "That's ridiculous. If you want to do it, why not?" Recently retired, Chuck stays more than entertained. In the mornings, he goes to the backyard to feed the squirrels, sometimes even letting them sit on his shoulder. When he's not biking, he enjoys taking photos, cooking for Kathy, and spending hours in his shed fixing the wind chimes that have fallen apart in the couple's backyard. "There's just so many things," Chuck said. "Learning never ends. There's always something new." More likely than his birthday, Chuck thinks his perspective on life comes from his father. That perspective of, the glass isn't even half full, but you see it that way, that may just be something that's genetic in me as well, he said. You try to see the bright side of things. Chuck is carrying a lifetime's worth of wisdom into his 18th birthday on Leap Day. "And the 29th, he said? "Yeah, maybe that just is kind of a turbocharger for it at times." Arapahoe County puts overdose prevention on wheels, by Nina Joss. As snow coated the streets on a chilly Tuesday morning, a new RV with the words Prevention Point on its side made its first spin around Arapahoe County. The vehicle is the county's newest harm reduction strategy aimed at bringing tools and resources for safer substance use to people across the county. The county's director of public health was joined by Colorado's attorney general and others who all said that the vehicle and the teams that will be inside it could save lives. Opioid overdoses led to 1,160 deaths in the state of in the state in 2022. The most recent numbers available from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. The new mobile unit will provide overdose prevention resources, infectious disease testing, tools for reducing exposure to infectious diseases, and sexual health resources. We know there are gaps in who we are able to serve and a greater need to serve more in our community, said County Public Health Director Jennifer Ludwig at the unit's unveiling event on February 27th. When Prevention Point Mobile Unit rolls off today and out into the streets, it will fill those gaps and support people who need our services but face barriers to accessing them in traditional settings. Arapahoe County used about $345,000 of opioid settlement funds from the Colorado Opioid Abatement Council to fund the new unit, Ludwig said. The county's harm reduction team already provides services and resources at fixed locations and through street outreach. But with the new vehicle, the team now has more flexibility and physical space to serve people where they are. Inside the white RV, there is a small kitchen, cushioned seats, and storage for resources. It is stocked with educational materials and even offers free Narcan, a brand of naloxone nasal spray that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. In the back of the truck, there is an area for testing for transmissible infections, including HIV, hepatitis C, syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea, County Health Educator Kit Matsky said. The RV is a safe place for people to learn about test results, she added. On days with extreme weather and temperatures, the vehicle also can give people refuge from the elements. It will also offer a syringe exchange program to reduce the likelihood that people using drugs will contract an infection by using the same needle repeatedly or sharing one. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, using sterile syringes reduces a person's risk of contracting HIV, hepatitis C, and other infections. The mobile unit also provides mouth covers and other items that can help reduce a person's risk of contracting an infection while smoking or snorting substances. Clinton Watley, the county's harm reduction manager, said the goal of harm reduction is to help save lives. We want to be out there to make sure that people are doing things safely and making sure that people stay alive, so that if they do want to access treatment, they're alive to do so, he said. So really just being out there to prevent unnecessary death, which there's too much of. Arapahoe County had the third highest number of opioid overdose deaths in 2022, behind Denver and Adams County. Ludwig, the public health department's director, said harm reduction programs also give an opportunity to provide referrals to other services and to begin conversations about treatment if individuals are ready to take that step. Watley said the mobile unit will work with community partners and visit areas where there are higher rates of substance use. For instance, the unit will regularly visit Giving Heart, an Inglewood-based organization that serves people experiencing homelessness. It offers a day shelter, showers, clothes, computer use, food, and connections to other resources. Donna Zimmerman, the organization's executive director, said the vehicle and initiative help expand what her team can provide. The harm reduction piece, I think, is important because a lot of our guests use drugs, she said. I think also the infectious disease portion of that is a benefit for us. And I am hoping that there will be fewer overdoses, just that we have the resources out there just to present to the people in need. Corrine Braddon, who works with an organization called Young People in Recovery that partners with the county, called the new mobile unit such a blessing for the community. The unit will also visit middle and high schools to teach events on overdose prevention, Watley said. A big thing for me, too, is educating the youth and making sure they know how to reduce overdose and if their friends are using drugs, how they can save them, he said. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser said the state is on track to receive about $750 million in opioid settlements, and that local and regional partners are important in finding innovative strategies like the one in Arapahoe County. About 80% of these funds are going toward the regional and local levels, according to his office. We need innovation, like what we see here, he said. Meeting people where they are, helping people live. We've got to all keep our hearts open. We cannot close our hearts to what is a crisis that is harming so many. Former Arapahoe GOP chair among few notable Republicans to show up at Nikki Haley rally, by McKenny Harford. Not a single elected Colorado Republican appeared at presidential candidate Nikki Haley's rally in Centennial on Tuesday. Several hundred people came to cheer Haley on as she swung through the metro area as part of a national whirlwind presidential primaries tour. And very few of them were notable Republicans. The notables included former Arapahoe County GOP Chair Suzanne Stayart, political strategist and former GOP State Party Chair Dick Wadhams, and former Secretary of State Wayne Williams. Stayart introduced Haley, saying it's the first time in a while that she is excited about a presidential candidate. "The last 8 years have been bleak," Stayart said. "We've lost membership from the Republican Party. We've lost races up and down the ticket. I am just so excited to have a candidate that's going to concentrate on actual issues instead of settling personal scores." Haley spoke at length about how Donald Trump, the former president who is the front runner for the GOP's presidential nomination in 2024, has damaged the party, causing division and consistent losses. "I'm looking at the fact that no Republican has gotten over 45% statewide since Donald Trump was president," Haley said of Colorado. The state party leadership, including its chair, Dave Williams, has moved away from moderate positions and recently broke party bylaws to endorse Trump before the primary began. Haley said many in the Republican Party idolize Trump, and that has caused the party to move in a direction that's not us. She said the party has lost focus on fiscal responsibility, abandoned foreign allies, and dismissed down-ballot races. "When you're running for president of the United States, your job is to bring people into the fold, not push them out of the club," Haley said. Haley argued that she could also remove the tent of anger, division, and hatred over America. She said she would focus on lowering government spending, improving relationships with allies, investing in veteran services, and reducing taxes on the middle class and small businesses. "Imagine a country where you can sit at the dinner table with your family and not have a political fight," Haley said. "Imagine a country where you can go to work and say what you need without fear of being demoted. Imagine a country where we can strongly disagree, but we don't have to hate each other." But Haley's vision isn't resonating with many Republicans. The former governor of South Carolina even lost her own state primary by 20% points on Saturday. A Global Strategies Group poll of Colorado Republicans found 76% viewed Trump favorably, while two-thirds of unaffiliated voters view Trump unfavorably. Unaffiliated voters are 48% of Colorado's registered voters and are able to vote in the Republican primary. In an interview with 9 News after the rally, Haley said she wasn't concerned about the lack of support from Colorado elected officials. "We don't try and get the political class. That's never been anything I've done in my entire career," she said. "I've always focused on real people, regular people." Colorado's primary is March 5th. It's too late to mail ballots in, so they must be dropped in a ballot box by 7 p.m. March 5th. In-person voting is also available. Thanks again for joining us for the Arapahoe County News. My name is Tim Elliott.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303 303- 786-7777.